Now joining us on line number 10 is indeed the Prime Minister of Canada, the Right Honourable Justin Trudeau. Good morning, Prime Minister. You're on the air.
Good morning, Patty. It's great to be back on VOCM.
Happy to have you, sir, and I know you're doing an Atlantic Canadian tour. And for us here, the issues are very similar to other provinces in the country. The pandemic and, of course, the economy and its recovery. For us, you know, well, 30% of the GDP is absolutely from the oil and gas industry. We know there's been a regulatory change regarding environmental assessments back down to 90 days. The question specifically is, the province and the federal government says they're working towards the package, whether that be tax incentives of capital cost recovery for continued exploration. It's the 11th hour. The CNLOPB land sales are in play. We do indeed have a partner in the federal government. Look no further than the fact that it's the Canada, Newfoundland, Labrador Offshore Petroleum Board. Do you have a specific package? If so, when will we hear it delivered?
Well, first of all, I hear the concerns, and I know how important the offshore industry is to so many jobs in Newfoundland and Labrador, and that's something that I've been working on. I worked on it with Premier Ball, and we made some good headway on a number of things, but I'm really looking forward to sitting down as part of this virtual Atlantic tour, sitting down for my first official bilat with Premier Fury, so Andrew and I can really dig into what's right, how we're going to strengthen the job opportunities for Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, not just now, but into the decades to come. There's a need to be smart about what we're doing, and I'm looking forward to talking about it with Andrew.
We look at best practices. Norway is generally the jurisdiction we compare our offshore to their offshore in the North Sea. Tax incentives have seen an increase in investment dollars for exploration. Here's a quote from you, sir. We made a decision to move forward on the pipeline because it was in the interest of Canada to do so, because the environment and the economy need to go together. We will be continuing with the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion. Does that sentiment extend to our provinces offshore and that type of investment?
I have demonstrated from the very beginning of this government's leadership 5 years ago that we're always going to be there for Newfoundland and Labrador. And the conversations we're having about whether it's the historic investments in supporting the fisheries sector, whether it's looking at how we can support the offshore oil industry in a way that makes sense given the way the world is changing, we need to make sure that Newfoundlanders and Labradorians are properly supported. And whether it's conversations around muskrat or stabilization, we're going to continue to be there for Newfoundlanders.
Is that a commitment to doing something for the offshore, Mr. Prime Minister?
I have always committed to be there for Newfoundlanders, and I'm not going to jump ahead of any conversations I'm going to have with Premier Fury in our first real sit-down in a few hours.
Conversations have taken place with the province and the federal government regarding Muskrat Falls. The same quote about Trans Mountain, I think, can be easily transferred to the Muskrat Falls issue. We know that there's rate mitigation promises or pledges have been made. We're talking about our hydro rates doubling without any input with our partners at the federal government level, and we are partners with two backstops in the form of federal loan guarantees, including one of some $2.9 billion from the Liberal government. Muskrat is for sale. To buy the pipeline at in and around the very same total we're looking at Muskrat Falls, people are worried. This is not just the 11th hour and cost of living increases. This is the potential for further out migration. We're the only province in the country that saw a population decrease in the last Stats Canada report. On Muskrat Falls, is the federal government interested in an equity stake, taking it over? Can you commit to playing an active role to keep our hydro rates in and around the selected number at 13.5 cents? Per kilowatt
hour. Listen, Patty, when you say that the federal government hasn't been there for Muskrat Falls, that's completely false.
I didn't say that, though.
We've stepped away. Well, you said that we're not showing up as a partner, and we have been, to the tune of billions of dollars of backstops, as you also pointed out in later in your sentence. So you really need to know that we are going to be always looking at how we can support Newfoundlanders and Labradorians. I understand that Muskrat Falls was a fully provincially driven project, but the federal government has stepped up with billions of dollars in backstops. And we know that electric grids, particularly through Atlantic Canada, are a really important part of a greener, better future. And we're going to work with the provinces, work with Andrew Fury in terms of how we can get that better future. But I'm not going to lay things out before I have a chance to sit down and work with Andrew and hear his vision for the province as well.
Does it change the water on the beans regarding regarding Muskrat Falls, that it's not just the Newfoundland and Labrador project and provision of electricity for the Labrador and the island, much more for the island, obviously, but the fact that we're going to allow Nova Scotia to use hydroelectricity to move away from some of their coal generation-fired plants and use Newfoundland and Labrador hydro. Does that change the water on the beans insofar as a nation-building project, a project that also moves us towards a greener economy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's a lot of really, really strong interest in the idea of an Atlantic Loop, the idea of investing to get Nova Scotia, New Brunswick off coal. We have a lot of opportunities to look at a greener future that involves strong investments in hydro, and Muskrat Falls is certainly going to be part of the mix. And those are conversations I've been having and look forward to continue to have.
At this moment in time, we know that we have to get our own house in order. We want to be a resilient standalone province to take control of our own fate. But we do indeed need some partnership, and not a leg up or a handout, a partner. But also in the effort to keep more control of our own destiny, the fishery is why we're here. So many rural coastal communities are still reliant on the fishery. One such concept that has not been included in amendments to the Fisheries Act is adjacency. And what that means for people listening, it means that those living in closest proximity to the resource will be the primary beneficiary. That's not happening. The last time the Act was amended under then Minister LeBlanc, this was glaringly left out. It puts more control in our own province, puts more control and wealth in the hands of our inshore harvesters. Is that something we can indeed consider and see or hear some commitment from you about looking at the Fisheries Act and giving us more control and more of the slice of the pie?
Listen, I've long understood how important fisheries are to the people of Newfoundland and Labrador, and that's why we've always been there to listen to their concerns and work with fishers to make sure that they're doing well. We made a historic investments with the Fish Harvesters Benefit and Grant, $469, almost half $1 billion towards fishers, and we know that the money is flowing already and the support is there. There's challenges because of COVID that we understand, but there's also the long-term future that we're looking at, and we're always going to engage and listen to people as with ideas and possibilities of how we can do even better. But again, these are things that we're going to engage in a responsible way as we think about what the future holds for all of us.
We may indeed see a reduced need for those types of packages to be created in the hundreds of millions or billions of dollars flowing if the fishery is more profitable because we had more of the quota versus other provinces, and of course being used as so-called diplomatic negotiating chips with other international fleets. There was a promise made by you and your government on the campaign trail, and now we're speaking to the country's seniors. The promise of 10% for seniors reaching the age of 75 on their old-age security was a welcomed piece of news, but it hasn't been followed through on. All the while, all the money that's flowed out the door, necessarily so, during this pandemic, but that seniors' promise, I get a lot of calls, emails, and concerns on that front. Will you live up to that commitment?
We know that seniors need to get extra support, and we know that people are living longer and worried that their retirement savings are going to run out before they expected them, and we need to be there, and that's why we made that commitment, and we're standing by that commitment. But obviously right now, through the pandemic, we're having to recalibrate our various priorities. We rushed out supports up to $600 for seniors through this pandemic response, because we know even though income supports weren't hit the same way, costs have risen for seniors. We're going to continue to do what is necessary, and we're going to continue to look at how we can help seniors the best possible way.
So will that 10% raise on OAS actually happen? If so, when?
Listen, these are the discussions we're having, and you might have to wait for the throne speech to find out what our plan is in terms of how we're moving forward.
When Parliament was prorogued, there was some legislation that didn't get an opportunity to be passed. So whether it be rolling in from CRB to a new program, some of the softened rules on employment insurance, people are waiting for those. The caller just earlier talked about mothers or expecting mothers, and that program has not gone through the Parliament because of the prorogation. Why did that happen when there were so many Canadians that you've told us many times that you're there for Canadians, the money will need to flow, but some of those important pieces of legislation were unattended because of prorogation?
Well, let's make sure we're not giving the wrong information to Canadians there, Patty.
What's the right information?
None of the measures that we're helping Canadians with will be affected in any way by prorogation. We are going to be able to continue to do everything that is needed, including getting people off the CERB onto EI. That is not affected by prorogation. But if you understand why we needed a prorogation, the throne speech we gave 8 or 9 months ago didn't mention the COVID situation, had no conception of the challenges that we're facing right now as a country, as an economy, as a world. We need a new direction for Parliament. And rather than just deciding unilaterally as a government, we're going in a different direction, it is the responsible and democratic thing to lay out that vision in a throne speech that Parliament will then vote on. It will be a confidence vote where we will be able to see whether this government's ambitious plan for the future and investing in Canadians has the support of Parliament. That's only the responsible and logical thing to do, and that's why we needed prorogation. So far from other prorogations in the past that were about avoiding confidence votes, this one triggers a confidence vote and demonstrates that we are true believers in democracy and putting our plan to the Parliament, even though it's a minority Parliament, all the more reason why we need to have the confidence as we move forward to help Canadians through this historically difficult time.
With prorogation, of course, you know, so if that's accurate information and there is no delay in programs being brought to bear, so be it. When we talk about prorogation and stopping the work of the standing committees regarding we or what have you, so Canadians will be concerned on that front. And the government has been characterized on some levels as being ethically challenged. Five investigations by the Ethics Commissioner, three directly related to your office. So when people say you simply try to shut down the work of the standing committees, even though Mario Dion continues his work, your response to Canadians?
Oh, the committees will continue their work as soon as Parliament comes back. Parliament's coming back the same week it was supposed to come back originally anyway. There's no delay in that one. And quite frankly, opposition parties can continue to focus on whatever it is they want. But what I'm focusing on right now, what the government is focusing on, is what is the plan for Canadians? How we're going to build a stronger economy? How we're going to move forward in investing in Canadians through this COVID and coming out even better on the other side? Greener, fairer, more opportunities for vulnerable Canadians, more support for Canadians who need it. That's the plan we're going to put forward, and that's what we're focusing on 100%. Look, if the opposition continues to want to, you know, argue over what they see as ethical lapses, which certainly are not, as I've said time and time again, they can do that. What we're going to stay focused on is what Canadians are actually worried about. Back to school. We just put out $2 billion for Canadians to support them back to support kids go back to school safe. We've made significant investments in supporting various industries and Canadians across the country as we get into the fall. We're moving forward on an app, which is a very exciting thing as well. These things are the things that Canadians are worried about, and that's what we're going to focus on. I'll let the opposition focus on me. I'm going to stay focused on Canadians.
There's a hiccup with the CERB this month. People say it hasn't been deposited. Generally, if it was apply on Monday, in your bank on Wednesday, people are worried and unable to get answers from CRA. Do you have an update?
We're working through some of the challenges because there was an extension. There might be a couple little hiccups, but we have said from the beginning we'd be there for Canadians, and we will continue to be there for them.
You're on your Atlantic Canadian tour. What can folks expect?
Sorry, what's that?
You're on your virtual tour.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of opportunity to listen to folks. I had a great meeting with our Atlantic MPs last night where they highlighted some of the really important issues around fisheries, around offshore, agriculture in other provinces, how we're going to make sure that we're continuing on the Atlantic growth strategy that has given tremendous benefits around immigration, around investments in Atlantic Canada over the past few years. I'm looking forward to meeting with sort of seafood producers, an aerospace company, a distillery as well. I'm going to be meeting with people all through the province and talking about the challenges they're facing with COVID, but also their hopes for the future and how the government can be there to support them.
We really appreciate your time this morning, Prime Minister Trudeau, and we look forward to hearing what comes on the heels of your meeting with new Premier Fury here in this province. Thank you, sir.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much, Patty.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's the Prime Minister of Canada, the Right Honourable Justin Trudeau. If you'd like to comment on anything you heard from the Prime Minister this morning, any other issues you'd like to hear and see broached, we can reach out to respective ministers to try to get the answers that we all so richly deserve. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're speaking with you.